today starts with a medical benchmark that is hard to ignore. OpenAI's O1 identified the exact or very close emergency room diagnosis in 67% of cases, while triage doctors were right in roughly 50 to 55% of the cases in the comparison. So the episode has two layers. First, a radar pass through the other technical signals today, cheaper agent loops, fuzzing infrastructure, live prompt injection risk, and open cyber models. Then we slow down on the medical result and ask what it really changes.
That sounds like a simple win for the model, but the careful read is more interesting. Will, the claim is strongest in a narrow diagnostic setting with rapid decisions and limited information. And the reaction layer immediately asks whether the comparison maps cleanly onto how doctors actually work. Exactly. The useful pattern today is not just that one model scored well. It is that every story touches the same operating question. When AI systems get cheaper, stronger, or more exposed to messy environments, the quality boundary moves from impressive demos to deployment discipline.
Let's start with the medical story as a radar item before we give it the deep dive treatment. What is the clean factual spine? Short pause.
The clean spine is that researchers reported O1 beating triage doctors on emergency diagnosis accuracy in the evaluated cases. In the evaluation, the source says the model reached 67% exact or very close diagnoses, compared with doctors at about 50 to 55%. With the advantage especially visible when fast decisions had to be made from sparse information.
And the stronger language around it was that large language models have eclipsed many benchmarks of clinical reasoning. That is a big sentence. How should we hear it without letting it run away from the evidence?
Here it is benchmark evidence, not a blanket replacement claim. It says these models can reason through some clinical cases at a level that beats a human comparison group under the study conditions. It does not say an emergency department should hand diagnosis to a chatbot, and it does not erase workflow, liability, bedside context, or the fact that doctors rarely diagnose in this isolated way.
The reaction thread also matters because it pushed back on the headline. One reader noted that O1 is not even the newest generation, and another pointed out that the preprint existed earlier. What does that do to the interpretation?
It pulls the story in two directions. If an older model generation already performs this strongly, then the capability curve may be more consequential than the single score. But if the study has been circulating in earlier form, then the news timing is less important than the replication question and the benchmark design.
Good, we will come back to that. The second radar item is DeepClaude, which tries to keep the Claude code style agent loop while swapping in DeepSeek V4 Pro through compatible backends. What is the operational point there?
The operational point is model routing is product design. The project argues that the terminal, tool loop, file editing, shell work, and Git workflow can stay familiar while the model behind the loop changes. That matters because Claude code is treated as a strong, autonomous coding experience, but the cost and usage caps are part of the product's experience too.
So this is not only a cheaper API story, it is a question about whether the agent shell and the reasoning engine can be decoupled without breaking the workflow.
Right. If the loop stays intact and the model swap is good enough, then the economic boundary for agentic coding shifts. But the skepticism in the discussion is healthy. People asked about direct compatibility, provider routing, and whether the code or prompts introduce trust issues. The source being open helps with inspection, but it does not prove the replacement model behaves identically.
For Chris's stack, that maps directly onto local routing and dense model selection. What should the listener carry from this story?
Carry the idea that cost savings are only real if the loop still solves the job. A 17 times cheaper claim is interesting, but the practical evaluation is whether edits are correct, tool calls stay coherent, context handling remains stable, and the user does not spend the savings fixing subtle agent mistakes.
Third radar item, Trail of Bits extending Resi with Libifel. This is a much more systems, software story. Why does it belong next to the AI items today?
Because it is about moving a testing workflow onto a more active and more capable engine. The source says Libifel has become important in the fuzzing community, while LLVM's LibFuzzer has been placed in maintenance mode. Resi is a coverage-guided fuzzer for pure Ruby code and Ruby C extensions, and adding Libifel support gives that ecosystem a more advanced fuzzing path.
The phrase coverage-guided fuzzer can sound narrow, but the consequence is broad. Find weird edge cases before attackers or users do.
Exactly. The useful detail is compatibility and maintenance posture, a fuzzer that lets Ruby developers and security researchers keep familiar harnesses while moving to a more actively maintained engine lowers friction. It also says something about the systems layer around AI adoption. The code we delegate to agents still has to survive aggressive testing.
Fourth radar item, Google's post on indirect prompt injection in the wild. What did it add beyond the generic warning that prompt injection is bad?
The post frames indirect prompt injection as a current priority for threat intelligence, not just a theoretical discussion. The question it raises is whether adversaries are actually exploiting this vector now, and if so, how. That is important because agents increasingly read web pages, messages, documents, and tool outputs that can carry instructions the user never intended.
So this is the messy environment side of the agent story. The model is not just reasoning over clean prompts, it is interpreting hostile or semi-hostile text.
Yes, the security posture changes when a model can take actions. A malicious web page telling an agent to leak data is not magic by itself, but if the agent has authority, context, and tool access, the prompt becomes part of an attack surface. That is why this belongs in a daily briefing about orchestration, rather than only in a security newsletter.
Fifth radar item, the Hugging Face post about AI and the future of cybersecurity, with Mythos and Project Glasswing as the surrounding context. What is the core idea there?
The post argues that frontier code-capable models are becoming part of cybersecurity's future, and that openness matters in how institutions respond. The briefing's usable point is not a full policy verdict. It is that code-oriented model performance keeps rising, and the security community is trying to decide how much capability should be inspectable, shared, restricted, or governed.
That gives us the bridge. We have medical reasoning, coding agents, fuzzing, prompt injection, and cyber openness. What connects them is not one topic label, it is deployment pressure.
Deployment pressure is the right phrase. The stories say models are getting clinically relevant scores. Agent loops are getting cheaper to run, test infrastructure is evolving, attackers may target agent inputs, and security institutions are debating openness. Together they point to the same practical question, what has to be verified before capability becomes infrastructure? And prind of vision.
Let's slow down on the medical benchmark now. The headline says O1 beat triage doctors. What should we treat as established for this episode?
Established here means reported by the source and bounded by the study description. The model identified the exact or very close diagnosis in 67% of cases. The human doctors in the comparison were correct in roughly 50-55%. The source also says the advantage was pronounced when triage required quick decisions with limited information.
What is the most important thing that sentence does not establish?
It does not establish a complete replacement workflow. A triage doctor sees a patient, weighs nonverbal cues, handles uncertainty, documents decisions, coordinates with other clinicians, and bears responsibility for what happens next. A benchmark case can test reasoning, but it cannot automatically stand in for that whole clinical system.
So the useful comparison is not human doctor versus magic model. It is model reasoning under constrained information versus one slice of triage judgment.
Yes, and that makes the result both less sensational and more useful. Less sensational because it is not the whole job. More useful because rapid reasoning from sparse information is exactly the kind of subtask where decision support could matter if it is validated, monitored, and integrated carefully.
Let's unpack the author's stronger claim that language models have eclipsed most benchmarks of clinical reasoning. What does that phrase tell us?
It tells us benchmark saturation is arriving in a domain people care deeply about. If models outperform traditional comparisons on clinical reasoning tests, then old evaluation baselines stop being comforting. The question shifts from whether a model can pass the test to whether the test predicts safe and useful behavior in a real care pathway.
That is similar to coding benchmarks. Once models score well, the benchmark stops being the finish line and becomes the entry ticket.
Exactly. In coding, a model can score well and still fail at repository context, messy build systems, or long horizon edits. In medical triage, a model can score well and still fail at patient context, uncertainty communication, or handoff into a clinician's workflow. The score matters, but the integration layer is where the risk concentrates.
The threat skepticism was not just generic anti-AI skepticism. One comment said doctors do not diagnose in the same way the benchmark makes them diagnose. Why is that such an important caveat?
Because benchmark design can make the comparison cleaner than the real task. If a model receives a distilled case and a doctor is being evaluated under artificial constraints, the result may measure diagnostic pattern recognition more than clinical practice. That still matters, but it changes what we are allowed to infer.
Another skeptical note was that these benchmarks are easy to mess up. How do we make use of that without dismissing the result?
By holding two thoughts at once. First, the reported performance is meaningful enough to watch closely. Second, medical benchmark papers need replication, careful leakage checks, representative case selection, and comparison against real workflows. The correct posture is not hype or dismissal. It is provisional seriousness.
Provisional seriousness is a good phrase. What would raise confidence? Beat.
Independent replication would raise confidence. A clearer breakdown by case type would help. A comparison against clinicians using the model as decision support would be more deployment relevant than a pure head-to-head. And follow-up evidence about false positives, false negatives, and failure modes would matter more than another single aggregate score.
What would lower confidence?
Evidence that the cases were not representative, that the model benefited from leaked or overly familiar examples, that the human comparison was artificially constrained, or that the model's mistakes were dangerous in ways the headline score hides. Also, if performance drops sharply when the input is messy, incomplete, or conflicting, the triage implication narrows.
The interesting systems question is where such a model would sit. Is it a second opinion, a triage assistant, a documentation helper, or something else?
Based on the evidence here, the cautious placement is decision support, not autonomous diagnosis. A model that is strong at generating candidate diagnoses under sparse information could help surface possibilities, but the clinician should still own the final judgment, especially when the cost of a confident wrong answer is high.
That also changes the product metric. Accuracy alone is not enough if the model is going to influence a human decision.
Right? You would care about calibration, explanation quality, handoff design, alert fatigue, and whether the model helps doctors catch misses without causing them to overtrust weak suggestions. A 67% score can justify more serious evaluation, but it does not define the product by itself.
Let's connect this back to DeepQuad for a moment. In coding agents, the model is also not the whole product. The loop, tools, permissions, and cost envelope are the product.
That is the shared lesson. DeepQuad says you might keep the Claude code like shell while swapping the model. The medical story says you might keep clinician authority while adding model reasoning. In both cases, routing and integration decide whether a capability becomes useful or just impressive.
Where does cost enter that comparison?
Cost decides how often you can run the loop. In coding, a cheaper backend may let an agent attempt more iterations, inspect more files, or recover from more mistakes. But cheaper only helps if quality stays above the task threshold.
That is why the replacement model question is not just can it answer. It is can it operate inside the same control loop with acceptable behavior?
Yes. A model that is cheaper but less reliable may push hidden costs onto the user. The same is true in medicine. A model that surfaces plausible diagnoses but creates extra review burden or misplaced confidence may not improve the system, even if the benchmark number looks strong.
Now bring in the Ruzzi and Libafal story. It feels far from emergency diagnosis, but it tells us something about verification culture.
It does. The fuzzing story is a reminder that software quality depends on aggressive, automated attempts to break assumptions. Libafal's support for Ruzzi gives Ruby and Ruby extension code a path to a more actively developed fuzzing engine. In a world where agents may write or modify more code, that kind of testing infrastructure becomes more, not less, important.
So one practical implication for agent users is to not only benchmark the agent, strengthen the harness around the code it produces.
Exactly. Agentic coding makes it easier to produce changes. Fuzzing, tests, review, and reproducible builds decide whether those changes are safe. If the agent loop gets cheaper, you might generate more code. That increases the need for tools that find edge cases mechanically.
The prompt injection story is the same pattern from the adversarial side. The more agents can do, the more malicious inputs matter.
Right, Google's framing treats indirect prompt injection as a priority because agents consume untrusted context. A document, web page, or message can contain instructions that compete with the user's intent. The hard part is that these instructions often look like normal text to the model, unless the system is designed to separate data from authority.
That phrase, separate data from authority, is the core security principle here.
Yes. If an agent reads a web page, the page should be evidence or content, not a command source. If it reads email, the email should not be able to change policy. The model may understand the words, but the surrounding system has to decide which words have permission to affect actions.
That also explains why the openness in cybersecurity debate matters. If frontier code models affect defensive and offensive capability, institutions have to decide what transparency buys and what it risks.
The briefing's safe claim is that code-capable model performance is rising and that the community is debating openness around cybersecurity use. Openness can help inspection, education, and defensive adaptation. It can also spread capability. The policy answer is not settled by today's source, but the tension belongs on the watch list.
Let's return to the medical result with that full map in mind. If Chris is deciding what to watch, what is the first concrete watch item?
Watch for stronger primary corroboration or replication of the O1 triage result. The claim is important enough that one article and reaction thread should start attention, not end it. The next valuable signal would be independent evidence that similar performance holds across varied cases and realistic clinical workflows.
Second watch item? Third watch item connects to agents. Watch whether cheaper routing actually preserves tool loop quality.
Watch whether model-assisted triage studies measure collaboration, not just competition. The clinically relevant question is often not whether a model beats a doctor in isolation, but whether a doctor with a model makes better, faster, or safer decisions than either would alone. Yes, for DeepClaude-style systems, the useful test is not only cost per token. It is whether the agent can edit files, run commands, reason over context, and recover from mistakes at the same practical level. If the cheaper model changes failure modes, the routing policy has to account for that.
Fourth, watch whether prompt injection reports move from concern to observed incidents with concrete patterns. Let's pressure test the episode thesis. Are we overstating by connecting medicine, coding agents, fuzzing, and cybersecurity?
And if they do, the design response should be permission separation, context labeling, tool gating, and auditability. The fix is not to hope the model ignores malicious text. The fix is to make sure untrusted text does not carry authority in the first place. The connection is interpretive, but it stays bounded. We are not claiming these stories prove one grand trend by themselves. We are saying they share a practical deployment problem. Capability is moving quickly, and the hard question is how to verify, root test, and govern it before it becomes routine infrastructure.
What should listeners not conclude from today's evidence?
They should not conclude that emergency doctors are obsolete, that DeepSeek can simply replace Claude in every coding agent setting, that libFL support automatically fixes all Ruby security issues, that prompt injection is already everywhere in the same form, or that openness has a single obvious answer. Each story is a signal with boundaries.
And what should they conclude?
They should conclude that the verification layer is becoming the center of the product. Medical AI needs clinical validation and workflow design. Coding agents need routing evaluation and tests. Fuzzing needs maintained engines. Agent security needs authority separation. Cyber openness needs careful trade-off analysis. Those are different domains, but the operating posture is the same.
Let's make the medical implication more concrete. Suppose an emergency department sees this result and wants to evaluate a model. What questions belong in the first meeting?
They should ask what cases the model was tested on, how those cases compare with their patient population, what information the model received, what information doctors normally use that was absent, how mistakes were scored, how uncertain answers were handled, and how the model would be monitored after deployment.
They should also ask how the model changes human behavior.
Absolutely. Decision support can improve judgment, but it can also anchor a clinician on a plausible answer. The design has to encourage review, not passive acceptance. That means surfacing alternatives, uncertainty, and reasons in a way that helps a human think rather than just displaying a confident label.
For agent builders, the parallel first meeting has different nouns but the same shape.
Right. Ask what tasks the model was tested on, which repositories or environments were included, what tools it can call, how permissions are scoped, how failures are detected, how cost effects retry behavior, and what logs exist when something goes wrong. That is the agentic equivalent of clinical workflow validation.
Where does the Resi story sharpen that? Short pause.
It says validation should not depend only on the model's self-report or the developer's review. Coverage-guided fuzzing is a mechanical way to explore behavior. When the code is Ruby or a Ruby C extension, moving Resi onto libFL gives that ecosystem a stronger engine for finding edge cases. That is the kind of external pressure agent written code needs.
And where does the Google prompt injection story sharpen it? This is why a simple leaderboard mindset fails. The model score is one part of the risk picture.
It says validation must include adversarial inputs, not only normal tasks. If an agent reads the web, the test set has to include hostile instructions embedded in ordinary content. The system should prove that those instructions cannot override the user's intent or the tool policy. Yes. Leaderboards can tell you where capability is moving. They cannot tell you whether the system around the model is safe, cheap enough, auditable, or aligned with the work. Today's stories all push us away from model-only thinking and towards system-level evaluation.
Let's do a quick listener recap before the close. First, the medical benchmark.
O1 reportedly diagnosed emergency cases more accurately than triage doctors in the study comparison, especially under limited information conditions. The serious reading is that clinical reasoning benchmarks are being challenged. The careful reading is that clinical deployment requires replication, workflow design, and attention to benchmark limits.
Second, the agent routing story. Third, software verification.
DeepClaude points at a future where the agent shell and the model backend can be separated. That could make autonomous coding loops cheaper and more flexible, but only if the replacement model preserves the behavior users actually depend on. Resi with libFL is a reminder that maintained testing infrastructure matters. As agents make code changes cheaper, fuzzing and other verification layers become a practical counterweight to speed.
Fourth, security posture. One final question. If you had to reduce the whole episode to one decision rule, what is it?
Indirect prompt injection is a live concern because agents read untrusted content and may have tools. The design principle is to keep untrusted text as data, not authority. Cybersecurity openness remains a trade-off because more capable code models affect both defenders and potential attackers. Do not treat capability as readiness, a strong benchmark, a cheaper agent loop, a better fuzzing engine, or a frontier cyber model as a starting signal. Readiness comes from the checks around it, replication, routing tests, fuzzing, permissions, monitoring, and clear evidence boundaries.
Before we leave the triage result, give me a practical example of how a high score could still mislead a buyer or hospital administrator. What would a better public summary of the medical study include?
A high score can hide distribution. If the model performs very well on common presentations but poorly on rare or ambiguous cases, an aggregate number may look safer than the clinical reality. A buyer should ask for slices, not just the headline average, because deployment risk often lives in the tails. It would include the case mix, how the human comparison was structured, whether the model saw the same information as the doctors, how close diagnoses were scored, and examples of failures. The point is not to bury the result in caveats. It is to make the confidence level legible.
How should a technical listener compare that with live code bench style coding claims in the DeepClaude story? For routing policy, what is the minimum useful evaluation Chris should run before trusting a cheaper coding agent backend?
The comparison is that benchmark scores are useful but incomplete. A coding score says something about problem solving. It does not by itself prove repository level behavior, safe tool use, or maintainability. The deployment question is always wider than the scored task. Use a small suite of real tasks from existing repositories. One edit with tests, one debugging pass, one refactor, and one documentation or shell-heavy workflow. Measure not just pass or fail, but tool, call mistakes, unnecessary file churn, cost, latency, and how often the agent needs human rescue.
Where would you put fuzzing in that evaluation stack?
After the agent creates or modifies code, fuzzing can test behavior the prompt never mentioned. For Ruby code and Ruby C extensions, the RUSI and libFL story is relevant because it gives that ecosystem a stronger route for coverage-guided exploration. That makes it a useful guardrail for agent-assisted changes.
The prompt injection story raises a different kind of evaluation. What should a basic agent security test include?
It should include untrusted pages or documents that try to override instructions, exfiltrate context, or trigger unsafe tool calls. The agent should treat those as content to analyze, not orders to follow. If the system cannot enforce that distinction, the model's raw reasoning ability is not enough.
How does openness fit into the same readiness frame? Let's be precise about the medical conclusion one more time. Are we saying O1 is better than doctors?
Open models and open analysis can help defenders inspect capability, reproduce findings, and build countermeasures. But openness can also spread techniques. The Hugging Face piece matters because it places that trade-off inside cybersecurity rather than treating model capability as a purely technical artifact. We are saying that, in the reported comparison, O1 reached a higher exact or close diagnosis rate than the triage doctors under the evaluated conditions. That is narrower than saying it is better than doctors overall. It is also strong enough that dismissing it would be unserious.
What would make this a true product shift rather than a research headline? What makes the Deep Cloud story a product shift rather than a repository curiosity?
Evidence that model-assisted clinicians make better decisions in realistic settings with measured safety outcomes and understandable failure modes. The model has to help the system, not merely win an isolated comparison. If users can keep a familiar Claude code-like loop while choosing different backends for cost or capability, then model routing becomes a normal control surface. But that only holds if the compatibility layer is reliable and users can inspect the trust boundary.
What makes the libFL story more than a niche Ruby note? What makes the Google post more than another warning about prompt injection?
It shows an ecosystem moving toward a maintained and modular fuzzing engine when an older option is in maintenance mode. The wider lesson is that verification tools need their own maintenance curve. Security does not improve if the checking layer stagnates while code generation accelerates. It frames indirect prompt injection as something threat intelligence teams are actively watching. The important move is from abstract concern to observed or anticipated adversarial behavior against agent systems. That changes priority for anyone building tool using agents.
If a listener only has time for one follow-up after the episode, where should they look? Let's close the loop on uncertainty. What is the risk of being too cautious here?
If they care about healthcare AI, follow replication and workflow studies around clinical reasoning. If they care about agents, test routing alternatives on real tasks. If they care about security, review how their agents separate instructions from untrusted content. Being too cautious can cause people to miss that model capability is already crossing meaningful thresholds. The O1 result may be bounded, but it is not trivial. The deep Claude pattern may be immature, but routing pressure is real. The security warnings may vary in immediacy, but the attack surface is plausible. Overenthusiasm turns benchmark movement into premature deployment. It treats cheaper loops as equivalent loops, treats fuzzing claims as solved security, and treats openness as automatically good or bad. The better posture is to move quickly on evaluation while keeping the claims narrow. Yes, run the clinical replications, run the routing comparisons, run the fuzzers, run the prompt injection probes, and inspect the cyber trade-offs. The work is not to slow down learning. It is to make learning strong enough to carry operational decisions.
There is also a communication lesson in the medical story. How should the result be presented to non-technical stakeholders? That phrasing keeps the result powerful without making it magical.
Present the number, the comparison, and the boundary in the same breath. Say the model outperformed the doctor comparison on exact or close diagnosis in the study, especially under sparse information triage conditions, then immediately say that this is not the same as autonomous clinical responsibility. Right, the danger is that a weak caveat can sound like fine print after a sensational claim. The better move is to build the boundary into the claim itself, so the listener understands what changed and what remains unsettled.
For coding agents, the equivalent communication problem is the phrase same UX, cheaper backend. What should a failed cheaper backend test look like?
Yes, same UX is a promise about surface continuity. It does not automatically promise same planning quality, same edit discipline, same tool judgment, or same recovery behavior. It might pass simple tasks, but make too many unnecessary edits, fail to understand project conventions, lose context in long runs, or call shell commands without enough care. Those failures can erase the cost advantage because human review becomes the hidden expense.
That hidden expense theme also applies to medical AI, bring fuzzing into hidden costs.
It does. A decision support model that forces clinicians to check too many questionable suggestions can slow the system down. A model that produces a small number of well-calibrated alternatives may be more useful than one that produces many plausible but noisy options. Without strong automated testing, agent-produced or rapidly changed code can accumulate hidden defects. Fuzzing is one way to expose edge behavior before it becomes an incident. The RUSI and LibFAL item matters because it lowers the friction for a specific developer community to apply that pressure.
And prompt injection is hidden costs as security review. What would be a bad response to Google's prompt injection warning?
Exactly. If agents interact with untrusted content, every new tool permission creates review obligations. Designers have to ask what the agent can read, what it can do, what content is trusted, what logs exist, and how an operator can recover when something behaves strangely. A bad response is to say the model is smart enough to know better. Smartness is not a permission system. The safer response is to design the environment so malicious text cannot acquire authority just by being included in context.
What would be a bad response to the openness debate?
A bad response is to treat openness as a slogan. The actual trade-off depends on who can inspect, who can misuse, what mitigations exist, and what defensive learning depends on shared capability. The briefing does not settle that debate, but it gives a reason to keep it active.
One more synthesis, all five stories change the burden of proof.
Yes, the medical result raises the burden on skeptics to engage the evidence seriously. The agent routing story raises the burden on expensive defaults to justify themselves. The fuzzing story raises the burden on fast development to prove safety. Prompt injection raises the burden on agent designers to prove authority boundaries. Cyber openness raises the burden on policy arguments to handle both defense and misuse.
That is a strong closing map. Give me the final listener action list.
First, track replication and workflow evidence for clinical reasoning models. Second, evaluate agent backends on real tasks before changing routing. Third, keep verification tools close to any agent-generated code. Fourth, test prompt injection boundaries with hostile content. Fifth, treat openness and cybersecurity as a trade-off that needs evidence, not slogans.